Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware.
Hello, welcome to the Aware Show's Radiant Body Summit. And we really should be calling this Body 3.0 because this is some of the most cutting-edge health information you're going to find on this planet. If you really look statistically at the state of health in America, you will understand that the information that we're imparting on this seminar and the education, the value that you will get just by the education of listening to these shows is in the top 1% of the information out there because it really, truly is authentically clean material where it comes to your health. And joining today is JJ Virgin. Now, she's not only a best-selling author of The Virgin Diet, but she also has written an entire plan around the sugar solution and that we have way too much sugar in our world. Apparently, there's 150 pounds of sugar that is consumed per person yearly, 3,500 pounds of sugar, which is the equivalent to the size of a car. That's pretty amazing. That's how much sugar in our lifetime that we eat, 3,500 pounds. So let's find out some of the dangers of sugar and welcome to the woman with the best arms on television. Hi, hey, JJ. Hey. So, let's talk about some of the toxicity around sugar and how do you get arms like that? Because
all right. Really you just asked me two questions.
All right, let's talk about the toxicity around sugar.
Arms, toxicity. So it's interesting because when you look at all of the major diseases, there's actually 70 different diseases that can be linked to sugar, but I look at those more as, you know, like we don't get diabetic overnight or heart disease overnight. That happens over time. It's more like what's happening when you eat something that creates sugar impacts. It's really not just sugar. It's really what is this food you're eating doing to you? Is it raising your blood sugar? Is it raising your insulin? What's it doing to create a sugar impact? And what you see is that when you eat these things, first of all, they feed the bad bacteria in your gut, which creates a lot of problems. That alone, when you feed the bad bacteria in the gut, and that can happen from sugar, it can happen from artificial sweeteners, a lot of the different chemicals, you actually then extract more calories from the food you eat and store them as fat, and you also get less tolerant of blood sugar, so you have less glucose tolerance, so you react more to the food you eat. So that's number one. Also, when you're eating sweet, you crave more sweet. We know sugar is a drug. It is the number one recreational drug of choice. It lights up the reward center in your brains. It's more addictive than heroin and cocaine.
It is.
Crazy. You know, I mean, I keep thinking about this is how come we're like feeding, because my kids, I still remember when they were in elementary school and I'd go in and they're having like these little parties and they're having cupcakes and juice and cookies. I'm like, what the heck is this? Like, it's like a drug feeding frenzy in there. It's the trifecta because you got gluten, dairy, and sugar. It's just an opiate trifecta.
Yes. It drove me nuts when my child was young.
No, but then I'm the crazy nutrition lady and no one likes you, you know, which is, you're like, well, so fine. Anyway. And then you look at what it does to your hormones. So what's it doing to your blood sugar, to your insulin, to your leptin, to your ghrelin, all these things that collectively are creating inflammation, telling your body to store fat, not burn it, and making you hungrier. So it just creates this spiral that then sets you up for all of those diseases out there, besides the fact that it just crashes your immune system. It competes with vitamin C to enter the cells, and it feeds the worst cancers, especially fructose. So, I mean, there isn't any positive thing. Because I get asked all the time, Lisa, I go, well, what about honey, right? What about honey? It's all natural. And I'm like, well... It's all natural, sure, and yes, there might be some good things in there, but it does not outweigh the bad that happens when you use these things. And when you look at what they do, the simplest thing you can do to take back your health is just to lower your sugar impact. But the challenge is that it's sneaking into places we'd never expect, and so many people are trying their hardest to eat healthy. And yes. Yet, you pointed out, the average person is eating 150 pounds of sugar a year, and that's before we even look at, you know, some of these other carbohydrates that are simply turning to sugar, you know, quickly.
Yeah, those are the sleepers. So what do you eat, fruits at all? Are there any low glycemic foods that you do eat that are like fruits?
Well, I hate the whole glycemic thing. I think the glycemic index model really has set us up and created the problem where we are right now, because it's part of the model. Like when I created the sugar impact scales, I look at the glycemic load, how much a specific dose of a food's going to raise your blood sugar, right? I mean, and that dose being how much you would typically eat, because how much you eat of a potato is very different than how much you eat of carrots, you know. And when you look at glycemic index, they compare 50 grams of carrots, which is like, you know, a truckload of carrots, to 50 grams of potato, which is a normal one. So that's important, but, you know, when you look at it that way, you actually ignore fructose. And fructose is by far the most damaging sugar out there. And, you know, all carbohydrates, except for fiber, have one or two fates. They're either going to turn into glucose, or they start out as fructose, and they basically are probably going to stay as fructose, because they could convert in the liver, the only organ that metabolizes it, into storage units of glycogen. But the liver's not very big, so most likely that ain't happening. Most likely when you're eating fructose, you don't raise blood sugar, so it's got a very low glycemic index, so it looks good. But that's because it's just beelining to the liver, where it tells your body to make fat. And because it didn't trigger the whole blood sugar response, it didn't trigger insulin or leptin or ghrelin. So you are now making fat, and you are still hungry. So I really have a big beef with the glycemic index, because it makes really bad things like agave look really good for you. And it's how a lot of the manufacturers are able to lie on the labels. Like, they'll put no sugar added and it's got fruit juice concentrate, right? Which is insane. Like, apple juice concentrate is worse for you than heroin is. Can I say that? Apple juice is worse than a Coke. I mean, I like to be bold.
And what do we give babies?
Apple juice. And the little kids in the WIC program. So we've got poor kids that are being given apple juice, which is making them diabetic. I mean, it's just awful, awful stuff. So yes, you can eat fruit, but I think we've gotten this hall pass out there that fruit's free food, and fruit is not free food. Fruit is not free food. You know, asparagus and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and lettuce, and the idea that we combine fruit and vegetable in one category is ridiculous.
Wow.
Or combine starchy vegetables with non-starchy vegetables in one category. Silly too. You know, broccoli is not the same as a potato, and broccoli is not the same as orange juice. They're just not.
Right.
Moreover, orange juice is not the same as an orange. You know, one is a soda and one's real food. So one you unwrapped and just hit them with the sugar.
Wow.
So,
orange juice is a soda?
To me, I look at juice as a soda. Juice is a soda. And people go, but the vitamins. I'm like, well, eat the piece of fruit. You wouldn't sit down and have four oranges, would you? No,
right.
You didn't. And, you know, when you drink the juice, you're not getting the fiber. And when you look at food, you want to make sure that you're getting the fiber, because the fiber tempers the blood sugar response. Fiber is, like, one of the biggest nutrition heroes out there that we don't use, right? And so the last thing you want to do is take a food and take the good stuff out and then say, here, have this.
Right. Okay, so, all right, so does sugar, and how does it make us age faster?
It ages, it creates something called glycation. So it's actually called ages, which is perfect. Advanced glycation end products. And what happens is the sugar cleaves onto proteins and doesn't need enzymes to do this. And it creates, the best visual for this is when you look at crusty bread. That crust is glycation, that sugar and protein glomming on without needing enzymes. And that happens in our body. And it turns out that artificial sweeteners can glycate, that sugar glycates, and that fructose glycates 7 times more than other sugars. It is the single most aging thing we can do to ourselves. And it's so funny, because here people are slathering all these things on, and then they're having their little, you know, green drink that's got 5 servings of fruit juice in it, or they're having their little yogurt that's fat-free, but fat-free is always code for high sugar because they pulled the fat out and made it all sugar. You know, it's so funny. There's some of these fat-free little strawberry yogurts out there have more sugar than ice cream.
Yes, I've seen those, yes. And I struggle with the lunchbox because the lunchbox is, you know, I try to make it healthier than the packaged food sold in the lunch truck. And then here I go to the market, think I'm doing a good job, and everything I could put in there with carrots and all these packaged, you know, to keep them cold for the
end. Right.
It's all sugar. Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, look at those little, what were those little, I remember when my kids were little, those little like yogurt.
Go-gurt, yeah.
Oh my gosh, you know, it should be called Fogurt.
It's true. So, okay, so then obviously sugar, and I love what you said about the brain, that it really simulates the, you might as well just take a very heavy narcotic and you would have the same amount of, so the pleasure center gets stimulated in the brain and you want more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. Why do we crave it at night?
So if you look at what's going on with cortisol and serotonin and so the brain chemicals, so, and I think a lot of it too, especially with women, it's we don't take the time out. We feel guilty taking the time out for ourselves. So it's like a little way we can take care of ourselves. But so nighttime, cortisol is supposed to come down, prepare us for sleep, help, and serotonin's now going to help us prepare for sleep by converting to melatonin. But if your serotonin's low, because you are stressed, and I'm yet to find someone who's not stressed, right? Or you've been using artificial sweeteners, which now have made you neuroexcitatory. You now are going to look for something to help calm you down, especially at night. And so you're looking around for that sugar, because that sugar is going to drive serotonin into the brain. So that's why we start to crave sugar, especially at night. And it's got a really bad effect, of course, because while it can temporarily create that, it then causes a hypoglycemic event, so at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's why when people drink a lot or they eat a big sugar hit at night, all of a sudden at 2, they're like, why am I up, you know?
Right. Can we talk about things like alcohol and so forth before you go to sleep? That's, you know, something that people think is going to calm them down. Is there, I mean, anything like whatever you're drinking that...
I'm having a Kavita. Have you ever had these? I'm so addicted to these things. This is Chakra Ursong made these because she had chronic GI problems because she ate so much sugar growing up. And so it's a sparkling probiotic drink. It's got 1 gram of sugar. I'm totally addicted.
Ooh, Kavita.
I'm sort of alternating that with some ice cream tea over here. I've got double fisting. I'm doing that.
All the time.
So what was the question? You got me off track.
Let's talk about coconuts, okay? So are coconuts low enough in sugar, coconut water, not the ones that are flavored, but...
Yeah, but even the non-flavored are a no-go, and I switched that. In the Sugar Impact Diet book at first, this is always the challenge with publishing something. The minute it went to print, you want it, you're like, no! You know, but I fixed it in the cookbook, but...
You're brave to do the diet thing because it is changing all the time. Yes.
Well, you know, I remember someone said to me, well, you used to say da-da-da. I go, what, when I find new research out, I should not change anything. I should just blah, 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 blah. I go, you want someone who's going to say, you know, we thought it was this way, but now with the latest research, we realize it's that way.
Yes, oops. Yes.
You know, I mean, my gosh, if I hadn't changed anything in 30 years, that's a little pathetic. So... coconut water, you know, the positives of coconut water is that there's a lot of great electrolytes. The negative is there's 11 grams of sugar. So I think we could do better. So I love the fermented because the fermentation process eats the sugar. So try having some fermented coconut water, and then you will get rid of the sugar. How cool is that? So you can make a kefir from it. I guess it's kefir.
And whatever it is, it's easy to make.
Easy to make. Even me. You know, I'm a food assembler. I do it. So, but I really like this. I really especially like just having this show up in my refrigerator. It makes me even happier. This is how I like to make it. I take it, and I do this. See that? There, I made it. So, anyway.
You're a food assembler. I love that. It's another word for cook. Me too. I mean, how much is there to cook when you're just doing clean foods? I'm not making sauces.
Everything. Like people cry. I'm like, this is easy. You cut the Brussels sprout. You could even buy them already shaved. Use some coconut oil. Put them in the oven. not hard. You can do it,
That's kind of how I cook, which I've always called myself a bad cook. So that's really interesting that you say that, because I'm like, how do you do it? You take a vegetable, you cook it, and you take some protein, you cook it. There's nothing fancy about that.
And by the way, cook extra, and then the next day you just pull it out and put it on the plate. Yeah. And you
we're doing tonight.
Sea salt and some pepper.
Leftovers. That's what we're doing tonight.
It's really about, too, it's about having really good oils.
Okay.
And start with really good ingredients. Like my whole freezer stocked full of amazing clean protein. And then we get fresh veggies. And this is like not hard. I mean, it's just not hard.
Now, do you do raw veggies? How much raw? How much cooked?
You know, I'm not a big formula person. It's kind of what I feel like at the time. So I always have a lot of avocados around. I generally do a salad or two every day. And then I usually roast or steam saute some veggies.
Okay.
So it's probably half and half on the raw versus cooked. Yeah. If I go too far over on the raw, then I get gassy, and then I stop.
But cooking the food isn't horrible. I mean, you're not cooking nutrients.
I don't believe in the whole, the whole raw thing doesn't make sense because there's certain foods that are better eaten cooked, So I know you want to eat some, get some raw vegetables in, get some enzymes, but if you're over the age of 35, you need to take them most likely anyway. If you're 30, 35 and under any stress, you should be taking some enzymes to help, especially with protein digestion.
What about the juicing thing? I mean, are you a fan of juicing?
I hate juice. Juice is the devil. I think juice is rotten. So even...
What do you mean?
Okay, well, fruit juice for sure, do not juice.
Right, got that.
Here's my challenge with a lot of the green drinks. A lot of the green drinks are not green drinks. They are fruit drinks with some green in them, right? They've got apples in them, they've got beets in them, they've got carrots in them. Forget it. So if you are doing a green drink and your green drink has kale and spinach and celery and cucumber, I do cucumber, spinach, kale, chard, and lime, a little lime because lime's got no fructose. Now, if you're doing that, cool, add some chia seeds so that you get some fiber. But even just the green drink without the chia seeds, you're going to get a big blood sugar hit from, because you didn't have the protein, fat, or fiber to temper it, right? So
talk about that. Talk about the protein tempering. Like it buffers the blood sugar?
You want to look at the whole trifecta. It's the protein, fat, fiber trifecta. So think about it. When you eat something, what is, food is information. It's all about what is that food telling your body to do, and it all comes down to hormones, right? So you want to make sure that when you're eating, you're telling your body to stabilize your blood sugar, burn fat, not store it, don't have a big blood sugar spike because that'll make you have a big insulin spike. You look at most people, and they're eating these little bumps of carbs all throughout the day, and that could even be a green drink. That means your blood sugar went up. When your blood sugar went up, your insulin went up. Okay, so your insulin's saying, get your blood sugar back down, so then your blood sugar comes down, but insulin doesn't come down right away because it takes more time. So then you go, God, I feel hungry even though I just ate. So then you went, I better have a little more. So then you have a little bit more, your insulin comes up a little higher, it brings your blood sugar back down, but your insulin's still up, so you go, I'm still hungry, I better have a little, and all day long. And you're doing what they told you to do, which is I should graze, and I'm eating low fat, so it'll be fine. And that's keeping your blood sugar's doing this little thing, your insulin's staying up, which is pro-inflammatory, you're always hungry, and when your insulin's high, you cannot burn off stored fat. You're teaching your body to be a sugar burner. One of the signs that you're a sugar burner is, number one, you can't lose the weight around your waist, and number two, you're hungry every couple hours. If you can't go 4 to 6 hours before you need to eat again, you've trained your body to be relying on a steady supply of sugar incoming rather than be able to rely on your stored body fat for fuel.
Wow, you just described most of America. Me too.
Well, that's because they're taught. They're taught this. It makes me crazy. I mean, if you look at the real studies coming out now on this, and if you go back 100 years, because our physiology didn't change, right? It's clear that we should go longer. And if you just think about it, it's like, okay, what happens there? Your insulin comes down. You don't want your insulin elevated all throughout the day. Mm-mm. No, bad.
Stressful, I think. Yeah. So in talking about how we ate for thousands of years, though, there wasn't refined sugar, there wasn't bread the way that it's cooked these days and processed and modified. Yeah, I mean, it really has only been on the food scene for the past maybe 100 years.
Well, look at the last, so in 100 years ago, the average person got 5 pounds of sugar in their diet a year.
Wow.
And there was less than 1% obesity.
Hmm.
Now it's 152 pounds and we are almost at we're at 34.9% obesity. It is, even 20 years ago, it was 26 pounds. I mean, it's gone sixfold, and we were 10% obesity. It is crazy stuff going on.
Well,
so,
I mean, also, some of the obesity scales out there are hard to read because they're trying to sell or promote something. What do you feel that the BMI should be? What should your body to fat ratio be?
Yeah, so I hate BMI. We really need to look. Well, I was always a heavyweight, you know, growing up, because I mean, I lifted weights with the football team, and so we really need to look at what your weight is made up of. So ideally, you're looking at body fat and a waist circumference, and we need to look at a waist circumference based on someone's height. I've never understood why I should have the same waist circumference as a 5-foot-tall woman. I'm 6 feet tall. Like, that is silly, right?
Wow.
So I think that you could look at those two things and compare them. And it was interesting, back when I was in doctoral school, the acceptable body fat percentage was lower than it is now. It's like we keep making it higher acceptable. It's not. You know, I think a woman, I'm 15%, and I think most women should be somewhere in the highest point should be 25%, but probably 22% or 20.
Yeah.
And men, you know, they should be somewhere like really athletic, 8, but most men should be 10 to 15, you know, and people hear that and they're like, but we're supposed to be athletic, fit, healthy people. It's
and
not
I always say agile as well. I mean, when you have that lean of a body, then your brain really functions well. It's not clouded, it's not
right.
Trying, it's not trying to start every day. You don't need a bunch of stimulants. I've recently got into what's the oil called? The
MCT?
MCT oil. Yeah.
Oh, you've been doing Dave's coffee, Bulletproof?
Yeah. I've just been doing the oil, not the coffee. Just the oil. I like the oil. I mean, do things like that help lower the cravings for sugar? And why?
They can, because fat can trigger the same reward center in the brain. But I think that for a lot of people, they have a craving for sugar because they're not getting enough fat and protein in. They're teaching their body to be a sugar burner, right? And so when you eat, when at each meal you get some protein, which protein pushes against carbohydrates to balance out the hormone responses. So you have glucagon pushing against insulin. And then if you look at fat, and fat has a really nice satiety effect because it triggers the release of some neuropeptides that tell your brain you ate.
Okay.
And then you look at fiber and protein together, and they slow down stomach emptying, which keeps ghrelin suppressed, so you're not hungry. So all of those things work together. They stabilize your blood sugar. They tell your body you ate something. You know, when you look at carbohydrates, and specifically fructose does nothing to trigger satiety.
Wow.
And
it triggers satiety. I got it. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so if you're trying to keep track of any of this, I just want to mention that that JJ has put together an amazing educational package for all of us. And if you go to the website, which you'll see below my name here, my face, theawareshow.com/virgin, she's put together this amazing educational package called the Sugar Solution Toolkit. So if you're trying to write as fast as I am right now, it's all in there for you, and it's extremely helpful. You've got four CDs that explain all of these chain reactions that she's talking about. You've got the, which is really helpful because then you can watch them over and over again. You've got a whole workbook so that you can track yourself. You've got the scales that she's talking about. It's all in there, plus a call with you, JJ, which is really cool.
No, not with me.
Hey, Paul.
It's impossible to get me because I'm all over the place. But no, I have my sugar impact diet coaches. So I put in a coaching call. They're amazing. I mean, my coaches are well trained nutritionists, been in the field for a long time. So I have my coaches who are going to do one-on-one coaching calls because I think that is such a key part. Then also, so you know, I have the whole program and I have my walking tour where I literally walk you through each part of the program, which we really haven't talked about. And then I have my workbook and I have my exercise program.
And
the scales that you take with you wherever you go so that you're never duped by misinformation again. You'll know exactly what to do whether you're dining out or at the grocery store. I also have shopping lists and meal plans.
So
and then
cool.
I included a ticket to my next online challenge. And we do this as a group. And the research is really clear on this, that when you do things, we gamify it so we have challenges and fun prizes. And what I've done is I've used all of the studies out there that show, you know, when you write things down, do you know one of the biggest determinants of success on a program is whether you journal it or not? And then how often you weigh, and then getting an accountability partner, and then gamifying it. So we put every single thing in that really helps make the difference between you being successful or not. I mean, just writing down your goals and sharing them. If you write down your goals, you're 42% more likely to achieve them. And then if you share them, that doubles from there.
I have, but you are right, the food journal is 5-pound weight loss. Every time you journal for a week, you will lose 5 pounds. It's about accountability. It is, I've done it every time, and that is actually a great, great reminder. Thank you. I was looking for something like that, too.
There you go. So, our work is done. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is really, really helpful because I haven't heard the whole concept around the fats, the way that you're explaining it, that it really gives. So it's fair to say that you can replace, you can get sugar completely out of your diet by eating fats, fiber, and protein.
Well, so what you've got to look at is it's not about eating no sugar. It's really about knowing which sugars to choose and which to lose, all based on lowering your sugar impact. And it's something you never want to do cold turkey, because if you are a sugar burner and you just pull them out, you're setting yourself up to fail. So what I did instead was I put sugars into 7 different categories: roots, fruits, grains, no fat and low fat dairy and diet foods, drinks, dressings, and sweeteners. And then I went through each category and I looked at foods in terms of their fructose grams, how much something raised your blood sugar and insulin, and I contrasted that with fiber and nutrient density, and I rated them high, medium, and low sugar impact. You know, high, red, no. Medium, proceed with caution, and low, green, go foods. And then I have you go through and first take a sneaky sugar inventory so you see all these things, because there's things that you would never think, Lisa, like balsamic vinegar, which is in reality syrup. Right? So we go through and you find all the places it's sneaking in. I give you very simple swaps. If you've been doing a potato, that's high sugar impact. Medium sugar impact's a sweet potato. Low sugar impact's pumpkin. So simple things in each category so you can just downscale.
Okay. Okay.
And then we take a sugar impact quiz so you can look at how much this is impacting you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the first cycle where you're just tapering. All you're doing during that time is adding before you take away. Get in your protein. Get in your healthy fats. Get in loads of non-starchy vegetables. Get in some slow, low carbs. Again, you know, all carbohydrates turn to sugar, but you want this to happen very slowly in your body. You want to make it, not mainline it. And so we go through that, and then once you've gotten through that cycle, you go into what's really cool. It's the transition or reset. It's where this is what I set out to prove. I believed, and my hypothesis was, that I could help the biggest sugar addict. I took 700 people through this, and these were some of the people that had gone the virgin diet and couldn't get over their sugar deal. And they were like lifelong sugar addicts. So it was. I did not go, hey, I'm going to make this easy. I'll get a bunch of people who don't eat sugar. No, these were like the people who had failed, right?
Okay.
And I set out to prove that I could help them get rid of their sugar, their sweet tooth, in 2 weeks or less. Now, the average person lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks. They lost 2 inches off their waist. But that is not the important thing. The important thing was the average person, and actually I never heard anything but this. The number one thing I heard was that sweet food just tastes gross. They lost their sweet tooth forever, and that changes everything, because all of a sudden now you're not white knuckling it through and relying on your willpower, which we know is stupid and doesn't work, right?
Right.
You never win against willpower, ever. So you've got to take back the control that sugar has on you.
And I can tell you that this has been my main problem, because I didn't even think that I was that much of a sugaraholic. But all of the symptoms that you're talking, I mean, I work out every day, I, you know, exercise like a maniac, but I still have that 5 pounds that I cannot, and then the 5 goes to 8, and then it goes back to 5, and before I know it, it'll go to 10, and that's dangerous. I don't like that. It doesn't work for my brain.
Not only is it dangerous, what a pain. I mean, how annoying to be trying to do everything right. And that's what always kills me, is I find people are trying to do everything right, yet sugar sneaking into places they'd never expect.
Right.
And when you identify that and lower it down, you're not hungry. You feel better than ever. You have amazing energy and focus. But weight loss becomes automatic. It's effortless. It just happens. And now you're not consumed with this every, oh my gosh, you know, like I'm up, I'm down. It's like, that is so annoying. That, like, that should not be one's hobby, right?
It shouldn't be, because I have better things to focus on than why am I, But I do speak for most women, is that we get to this place where we're just so stuck with our bodies, and then the hormones get affected, and the whole thing cascades from there. Now, sugar and hormones, can you talk about that? Estrogen and that whole project.
That whole thing.
This will actually go to the arms category, because don't we store a lot of our estrogen in the back of our arms?
Well, estrogen's, it depends where you are in your life cycle. You're not storing estrogen in the back of your arms, and really where your fat deposits are really have to do with your genetics. But of course, we also know that as women become more insulin resistant, they can become more estrogen dominant. They become more of an apple, and they have more fat around their waist, their arms. And I say that laughingly, because remember, I date myself when I talk about apples and pears, because there are no more apples and pears, because there are no more pears. There are only apples, right?
Oh,
remember the whole
body shapes you're talking about.
Yeah, there used to be, for those of you that are not 50 like me, there used to be this thing called apples and pears, because there used to be people that looked like pears that carried the majority of their weight in their butt. But it doesn't happen like that anymore, because everybody's got too much sugar, so they're insulin resistant, so they're storing all their waste around their weight around their, you know, their stomach, their boobs, and their arms. Now, when you go through menopause, you will, if you've got a lot of abdominal fat, you're going to start making your estrogen there. But ideally, I mean, the issue more is with all of the hormonal stuff, is you really want to control your sugar as much as you possibly can, because that's going to help you control your stress hormones, and that's going to help you go through menopause better. And you do not want to have, although people, women who have excess body fat might feel better going through menopause, because they're able to build some, you know, produce some of that estrogen through their abdominal body fat, but that's not healthy estrogen, and that's going to put them at higher risk for breast cancer. So you do not want to be doing that. Right?
Okay.
That would be a no-no.
So the waistline, when it starts to go away, that's your trigger for the fact that your body is eating these hidden sugars. So what other places are there hidden sugars? Or just eliminate everything except the protein and the vegetables?
No, because it's not about eating no sugar. It's about lowering your sugar impact. And it's really not just about sugar. It's about which carbohydrates quickly turn to sugar in your body, like corn, like, you know, it's wheat bread raises your blood sugar more than table sugar does, you know, and dairy is very insulin producing. Milk is amazing at raising insulin. So it's really about knowing the impact of these different foods and knowing which to choose and not eating no carbs. I mean, I get my carbohydrates from very slow, low carbohydrates. So that would be things like pumpkin. Some berries, if you're out of the... I do one cycle where I drop fructose to zero, because it turns out the more fructose you eat, the better you get at transporting it straight to the liver, where it tells your body to make fat. And when you pull it out within a matter of days, you get bad at that, and you want to be bad at that. So, I get most of my carbohydrates from non-starchy vegetables, some beans. I think beans are one of the most amazing foods.
Really?
Now, yeah, I don't want to go vegan or paleo on my talking. So I always say with sugar impact diet and virgin diet, whatever you are, I've got a program for vegans, program for paleo. So I know the paleos are like, no beans, you know, and the vegans are like, all beans. So, but wild rice is another amazing food that people don't think about, because
the black rice?
Yeah, it's a grass, not a grain. So wild rice and quinoa and legumes are some of my favorite, and squashes. Squashes are amazing food that we tend to not eat. And you can use a little spiralizer and make the most amazing stuff with those squash. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost
What's
like...
a spiralizer?
It's so fun. So this is sort of like you're just going to create Play-Doh in your kitchen. It's a little...
Yes.
You can make butternut squash noodles and zucchini noodles.
One of those. I love that. It's the Vegemax or veggie something. Yes. I love that thing.
It's like an old, remember when we were younger and it was like a Play-Doh set? You had the thing. It's sort of like
that.
You're using a zucchini. It's like that, but it's not that, right?
But you can use that on squash and maybe even sweet potatoes. Yeah. I never thought about it that way. I don't know about sweet potatoes, but squash, that's a great idea.
Well, I'm not a big sweet potato. Sweet potatoes are medium sugar impact. I do a lot of butternut squash and pumpkin and kombucha squash, and so you can do it with that.
Okay, so butternut. What are sweet potatoes, yams? Those are the ones that are
medium
impact, right? Okay, all right, so butternut squash. Okay, all right, so now proteins. What are your favorites? What do you stay away from? Do you eat them all? How do you prepare them?
I think where you have to be careful is with fish because of the mercury. I just got done with a big mercury detox. I have a sauna in my garage.
Wow, yeah.
I have a sunlight and sauna that I just love in my garage. Nice. But I just went through, was eating too much ahi. So I pretty much stick with wild or sustainable, and I go scallops, salmon, halibut, sea bass, and some crab, and that's sort of it. And I get it all from I have a buddy who ships everything to me, my wild things guy. And then I do a lot of lamb, and chicken's one of the harder ones to get really good clean chickens. So I'm really careful about chickens. Mary's has good chickens. And then grass-fed beef, you know, and pastured pork. I mean, I pretty much eat all of it. And I don't eat much in the way of eggs because if I eat eggs too often, I start to build up a food intolerance to them. So I'm careful with them. I do a protein shake every single morning. I do a blend. I use a defatted beef shake and a plant-based pea shake, and I mix them together.
Wow.
And,
plant-based pea. So the plant-based pea protein would give you what you need, and then the other gives you the enzymes?
Well, what's interesting is the defatted beef, they both have different. So I made both types because I have vegans and paleos. So my paleo-inspired people do the defatted beef one, and my vegans do the pea.
I've never heard of a defatted beef shake.
Oh, it's amazing because it supplies collagen. It's great for your hair, skin, and nails. It's great. I had a total knee replacement, great for healing.
Does it taste like beef?
It tastes like whey protein, but whey protein's horrible. I'm totally anti-whey because whey raises insulin. And most people don't need to get their insulin raised. You know, if you were a bodybuilder, big fitness person, and you're trying to put on bulk and you wanted to use whey right after a workout, but that's not my population, right? My population is someone who's generally 35, 40 plus and trying to lose some weight, and they don't need to raise their insulin. But the mouthfeel of whey is like a milkshake. Well, defatted beef's the same. It tastes like a milkshake. So I just like the two together because they both have like a different kind of mouthfeel, and the two together I'm like, love. I always get protein at each meal, and I always get some fat. Like my shake in the morning, I put in coconut milk from So Delicious. I put in avocado. I put in extra fiber. I put in my shake mix. I put in raw cacao nibs that are amazing. They're fat and fiber. Yeah, so just between my fiber, the fiber in my shakes, the avocado, and the raw cacao, I'm probably up at like 30 grams of fiber right there. And
you don't worry about the calories at all? Or
I never, like, the study, here's what the studies show. People who eat a bigger breakfast, 400 to 600 calories with good protein, lose more weight.
Wow.
Less. Don't skimpy breakfast. Don't do that. And I know in the intermittent fasting world, they were really high on skipping breakfast, but I looked at all the intermittent fasting research, and I think the application for women is that it's really good for us to stop eating 3 hours before bed, at least. Go 12 to 14 hours before you eat again, but don't skip breakfast because women who really restrict an intermittent fast become irregular, infertile, mean, crabby, angry.
Yeah, you're hungry all the time.
You're not mean. Women, you know, we are not men, and men, I think, were built to be able to go out and hunt and go for long periods of time. We were not. So if I know I have to have my breakfast, and then usually 4 to 6 hours later I'll have lunch, and then 4 to 6 hours later I'll have dinner. If I need a snack, I have one. That's it. And I have a small dinner. Dinner's always my smallest meal.
Oh, it is. And do you stop eating at a certain time, like 6 or something like that?
Yeah, it just depends what time. You know, my life is weird. I have no, like, I travel half the time and jump time zones and,
that's crazy.
So I tend to live on a, like, I'm early on the east west coast and late on the east coast.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, because
I try to, you got that right. Okay.
So
I want to go back to, all right, so all this information that JJ Virgin is talking with us about is in her educational package here, which I find there's so much right now to talk about, and there's so many, each one of the topics that JJ is talking about, we could go into for an hour. So it's about learning, and this is why people that have been on her diet and her program need to have the knowledge of what you're doing. It really helps with the why. You could start off with a few of these things and knock off your, 5 to 10 pounds off the bat, because it's something, it has so much to do with sugar. So the package you could find at theawareshow.com/virgin, and you're going to find a 4 CDs there, which is going to talk all about the sugar solution and everything that you need to know about what she's talking about. You can break it down nice and slowly and learn. And this is going to help your family, everyone else as well. And then you go after the workbook, which, as we said earlier, journaling is the key. It's accountability. You're really accountable as to what you are putting in your mouth, every single thing. So when you go to put that extra thing in your mouth that you know is not on the diet, you don't want to write it down. It's just weird the way that works, but it's kind of magical. And I love how you gamify it. I got to check that out too. Mm. And then there's the color coding brochure that you can take to the color codes and identifies what's on the food list and how to take it shopping and so forth. And then there's the exercises, and you can learn how to get JG Virgin arms. And it's all in there.
I created a brand new exercise program for the sugar solution. This I call it my core four, and it was how you could create more energy, get rid of your cravings, and blast the fat off. So I created a whole new cool exercise program.
Oh, yeah. So it's new. Yes, I've seen some of your other ones. This is nice.
All brand new, really built, because I was like, okay, I want to build a program that is going to help you, improve your sugar sensitivity, get rid of your cravings, burn the fat, and have better focus and energy. So I think it's very cool. You can only get this program, though. You cannot buy that thing separately. It's just part of the sugar program.
Very cool. And then there's also a coaching call that you'll get with one of the experts so that you can really curtail this to you, because everyone who ever calls in on health shows says, well, what about my this and my that? And that's true. You have your own individual issues. But a lot of what you're pinpointing here is, I think, I've hosted a health show for a long time, and I still am finding what you're talking about different and new compared to what I know. So everybody has their own slant, but for my body, what you're saying is making a lot of sense. I am probably high on the sugar index, and I didn't know it.
I was. You know what's so funny? So here I am, and I write the Virgin Diet, and the number one question I get asked about is sugar. And it seems that people are either totally, they cannot get rid of it, they're controlled by it, or they're just confused, which is even worse, Lisa, because you think you're doing everything right, but it's sneaking in. And so I thought, okay, I got to do something. And I had always been bothered by the glycemic index silliness. So I thought, all right, I'm going to create a brand new way to look at sugar so that we can take back control. But as I'm going through it, I'm like, oh, crap, right? So I couldn't believe that it was sneaking into my diet. I was like, wait a minute, right? It's just things you don't think about.
And what was it that you were eating that was sneaking in?
Well, one of them was balsamic vinegar, and just some of the things when I was eating out. Now when I eat out, I'm so aware of it because I'm like, wow, that's sweet. Some of the dressing, you just don't really, I wasn't being as careful with it as I should have been. And, if you look at most of the restaurants, like the perfect example is a salad at a restaurant, because you'll sit down at a restaurant and they've got something and it's got glazed nuts, it's got dried fruit.
Yeah.
Maybe it's got some kind of protein that they put a little sweet something on.
Oh.
Then they topped it all with a raspberry vinaigrette. I mean, you basically turned your salad into a sundae, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now what about the whole kale craze? Are you okay with kale and lemon and olive oil and that?
Yeah, well, so here's the funny one. Kale is amazing. Kale chips are incredible, but the kale chips at the grocery store are not incredible. The kale chips at the grocery store are crap, because if you look at them, like, you turn it over and you look at the label and look at what they put in there. I mean, first of all, chocolate chip kale chips, really? Come on.
I know. I saw those, yes.
Have you tried those? Oh, my gosh. They're so good. But, you look at a lot of the kale chips out there, and they're really not kale chips. Kale chips are just, they're the easiest thing on the planet to make.
I seem to perfect those things. They keep getting so soggy for me.
Really?
I put the lemon and olive oil and the kale, and I massage it all and throw it in a tray. What am I doing wrong?
It comes up. Oil. Or did you over, like, You didn't get the water off them? You need to spin it. Did you?
Okay, spin it. And I could be using too much lemon because we have a lemon tree, and I just pour lemon on these things.
No. You're just, don't skip the, I don't do any lemon. I just do whatever oil I'm going to use and sea salt.
Really?
That's it.
Don't do the lemon at all?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe I should try that because mine keep coming out soggy in the middle and burnt on the edges.
Oh, that doesn't taste very good.
I never
eat anything but oil, so I don't know.
Okay. Do you cook them at 400?
I have no idea what I cook them at.
You just turn the oven on and it goes?
No clue. Well, most of the time, so when I do all my events at hotels, we just have, I hand my cookbook to the hotel chefs, and they make stuff for us. So I'm like going, I don't know what temperature they put the oven on, so okay. I don't remember because I haven't made kale chips for quite a while. I usually have someone else make them for me.
Well, that's fine. Okay, on things to get out of your pantry, and these are like the top, what are the top 10 things to get rid of your pantry and your refrigerator?
Oh, boy. I'm looking right over at it right now because I actually am in a studio where we have the staged pantry and fridge.
Cool.
So white rice, white pasta, switch your pasta, and I'm going to say pull it out, but I'm going to tell you what to put in instead. So take your pasta out, and have you tried that red lentil pasta?
No.
Oh, my goodness, it's so good. I love it so much.
That sounds good. Okay.
It's really good. If you've been doing raisins, switch over to fresh blueberries. A lot of the prepared salad dressings are just garbage, especially if they're fat-free. You know, a lot of those fat-free dressings have a teaspoon of sugar per tablespoon of dressing. So, I mean, what I love, here's my most favorite salad dressing, and it's an assembly dressing. In fact, sometimes I don't even make it before I put it into the salad. I just make it in the salad.
In the salad, yes.
In the salad. Lemon juice, and lemon juice is awesome because sour takes your sweet tooth away, and lemon juice also helps balance your blood sugar response, helps lower the blood sugar response to a meal. Lemon juice, sea salt, macadamia nut oil.
Ooh, wow.
So, yeah, oh my goodness. So yummy. And you'll save money. Macadamia nut oil is a more expensive oil, but it's a lot cheaper than those prepared salad dressings. Barbecue sauce, garbage. Do a dry rub instead. I've got some great dry rubs in my cookbook.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But you have to watch the dry rub. We were doing a live cast the other day, and I had my assistant go out and get a dry rub because I wanted to show the difference. And she gets this one that says, sugar rub. I go, what the hell were you doing? What are you doing?
Some of the dry rubs are pretty good, but as long as they don't have too much sugar, which they put right in.
They shouldn't have any sugar, and you can make them yourself. So make your own, no sugar. You don't need it.
How do you make your own? Paprika, and what do you put in it?
So it depends what you like. Like, you could get chipotle, you get black pepper, you can get cayenne, whatever you like in there, you know? It's like, just make it. Rosemary, I love rosemary. Love rosemary.
Yes, I grow that.
Check your mustards, because a lot of the mustards have honey or wheat flour in them. They don't need to have those stuff in them, so, you know, get yourself a clean mustard. That's a critical
mustard point. Has wheat flour in it?
A lot of them do. Isn't that sickening?
I did not know that. I knew barbecue sauce, but I didn't know mustard. Okay. And so then gluten-free junk foods, gluten-free pretzels, that type of stuff, even though they say whole grain, what's up with the gluten-free foods being so...
Well, remember, whole wheat, the whole grain thing, because whole wheat we know can raise your blood sugar more than sugar, but if you look at most of this gluten-free stuff, it is high sugar impact because they use potato flour or corn.
Right.
Like, that just makes me crazy because potato and corn are so high starch, and the minute you eat high starch, in your mouth, amylase enzyme starts breaking it into sugar. So high starch equals high sugar. So you know what's the best gluten-free food? Things that don't need to say gluten-free on them. Like, you know, wild rice doesn't need to say gluten-free on it. A pumpkin doesn't need to say gluten-free on it. Berries don't need to say gluten-free on it. If it needs to say gluten-free, stop it. And you're spending so much money. And you know what? You probably weren't eating a cookie before, so stop eating the cookies now because they say gluten-free on them. It makes me nuts, right?
Interesting. You know? What about tortillas or anything like that, like the gluten-free tortillas? What do you wrap around things?
So my two favorite wraps are coconut wraps. Have you tried those?
No.
Amazing. Coconut wraps, amazing. There's a place called Julian's Bakery. You can get it at, I think, Amazon has them online. But Julian's Bakery, I have a lot of these resources in the program, all my favorite shopping stuff.
A lot. Nice, nice.
Yes, and then I also love just lettuce wraps work really well. But those coconut wraps are out of this world.
What are those made out of? Just raw coconut?
Coconut, yeah. I don't know. It's magic how they did that, but it's, I don't know.
That is so cool. By the way, this is a great offer for somebody who is in an area that they can't access your local, you know, Whole Foods or your expensive foods, restaurants, markets. You can order this stuff online. You can get it on auto ship. You get the best of the best here, and you can multi-source your shopping. I found that not everything does not come from one place anymore.
No, I love there. So can I give you another great resource, and we put it in the program, is this place called Thrive Market. Thrive Market. Do you know about Thrive?
Yes.
My gosh, most amazing place ever, because it's free shipping. It's like Costco met Whole Foods met Amazon Prime.
yes, totally. That's amazing. Yes. It's an online health food market for people that have just learned about it. And Thrive.com, is it?
ThriveMarket.com.
Thrive Market. Okay, and you can get all of these, like the MCT oil I was talking about. You can get phytoplankton, you know, dust. You can get so many things on there because they really have vetted out their products.
Yes.
They get
fantastic. So happy with them.
Good prices too, as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, I met the guy who owns it, and I can't remember his
Gunnar.
Name.
Gunnar.
Yes, Gunnar. Just a great, great idea. I mean, talk about a terrific idea. Okay, well, you are up to such amazing things, and you have an incredible ability to research these things and make it practical for us. And if you listen to everything that JJ's talking about in this educational package here and really learn and take it on, this is your solution to having not only a healthier body. Let's talk about a body that is fit and agile and quick thinking and energetic and fun loving and, you know, just a body that works for you, that you don't have to labor through in order to have a good relationship. You just have extra energy, and you want to be happy, and you want to be in love, and you want to have a good time and learn new things. That's what happens when you have a quick, agile, happy body. And so it's not necessarily about the weight loss. However, that does help you be a little bit quicker. And
it's a little side benefit.
Yeah, it helps you move
better. Weight loss might occur when you lose your sweet tooth. You know?
The website again is theawareshow.com/virgin, and it is your key to changing your body. It's a whole system, though. You can't just say, here's a five-step pineapple diet and expect to lose any weight. Do you remember the pineapple, the Beverly Hills pineapple diet?
You remember that? Wasn't that a grapefruit diet? I remember that gal, because then she went broke, and so she tried to do another, like, version 2 of this. I'm like, what are you going to do next? You know,
the pineapple,
like,
the grapefruit.
What are you going to do?
Talk about high glycemic, yeah. So anyway, high sugar. So this is pretty much the latest research, the best of the best. As I said earlier, this is Body 3.0. You're getting all of the latest information here. But not only are you getting the information and the education around it, but you're getting the how-to, where to order the foods, how to put the journal together, what the shopping guide resource should be. I mean, this is making it, I'm sure you have heard all of it, JJ. You've heard all of the complaints in the world, haven't you?
Well, I think it comes down to, first of all, what breaks my heart the most, Lisa, is that is seeing people trying so hard, but following the wrong set of rules, being duped by misinformation, by the food labels that say no sugar added, or being distracted by gluten-free, or by something saying no artificial flavorings when it's got artificial sweeteners. So there's so many things out there that could confuse you so that you get trapped in this cycle of, you know, addiction that you didn't even know you were in. And that breaks my heart, is seeing someone trying so hard and they just give up because they go, oh my gosh, I guess, and then they start this one. Well, it's just it's my genes, or, you know, I'm getting older. You know,
yeah.
I'm 52. I'm 15% body fat. Forget the I'm getting older.
Wow.
Okay, that makes me crazy.
Wow.
So You know, you don't have to settle for that. This I've seen this just work amazing for, again, I took the hardest people ever and brought them into this, and because I wanted to show that we could break this cycle, that when you have the right information, when you follow the right set of rules, and when you taper instead of go cold turkey and use this, you're never hungry, you get rid of your cravings, you take back your health, you take back the control, right? And it changes everything.
Here's the biggest challenge that I have is that I do the workouts, I have the trainer, I have a certain amount of health knowledge, but for me, I need a food coach. I need somebody who's going to walk me through this every day because I have a crazy busy life, and I only am able to handle my crazy busy life in a good way if I am supporting my body. So I think that the most valuable part of this is the coach. I really think if I had somebody that could tell me every, you know, that could keep me accountable and set me on my way, that's training me for life. That's basically teaching me how to fish. That's what I think I
need. Ability is so important, and, you know, so that's the other piece of it that I think is so important is, like, checking in with someone, going through it with them, and it also, that along with having the online challenge that we start gives you a start date. I find so many people don't get started because they don't have a start date, you know?
Yeah,
Tomorrow. It's like, so yes. You got to have a date.
Today. Oh, I blew it today. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I find that accountability partner is one of the best things. So you get a coaching call with this person, and then if you want to continue on, you can. But this is something that really gets it into the practical day-to-day, really do it for real now.
Yeah.
Not now, just talk about
right now. Get started now, because you know what? It's easier than you think. And that's the other thing I've heard. It's easier than you think. Tapering down, you're not going to be hungry. You're going to know exactly what to eat. You're going to save money doing it. That's the other cool thing. Price this whole thing out. It's actually less expensive to eat this way. It's easy to do. You're not going to be like slaving away in the kitchen. You'll know how to dine out. You'll know what to get at the grocery store. If when you add the exercise in, it's short bursts of exercise you can do anywhere. You don't have to go like to a big gym or spend hours. Like, you probably will work out less than what you're working out right now.
Right.
And it works. And that's the best thing.
That is the best thing. Well, thank you for putting together such a well-rounded program and really hitting all of the points on this. So I really appreciate it. This is something that I can tell works. Absolutely. It's not just the one thing. This is very comprehensive. And you have to hit all of these points in order for it to really make an impact in your body. So don't give up, people. Please empower yourself. And then when you start, I can imagine on the first week of this, your body starts to take over and not crave the sugars anymore and crave the good foods, and it starts to work by itself. And so you're not trying to trick the body, you're just getting it to work more efficiently.
Right.
Cool stuff. Thank you so much, my lady. Appreciate everything that you've taught us. All right, so once again, the educational package can be found at theawareshow.com/virgin, and empower yourself. Get all of this information. Check it out. It speaks for itself. And until next time, thank you so much, JJ, and I invite you guys to stay aware.